Totally Football show. Today, Totally Football no show, as Man United bend over for Ben Yedder, bowing out before the quarters. It's not me, it's you, says Moo. We ask, will things brighten this weekend against, well, Brighton? Also out of Europe, Chelsea, well beaten over two legs, and in Courtois' case, between them, by Barcelona. We salute Barca, Messi, Sevilla, and the midweek's other winners, Bayern and Roma. And it's back home to say, miss a little tight-lipped, ashen-faced sideline arm-crossing and post-game passive aggressivity? Then you'll be as happy as we to see Saints sign up Mark Hughes. Sparky returning at Wigan in the FA Cup this weekend. We preview the quarterfinals and the smattering of Premier League matches in this Totally Football show. Listeners, great news. On this Totally Football show, we've got James Horncastle.
Hello.
We've got Julien Laurent.
Hello.
And like a new signing, Michael Cox back in the lineup.
Hi, James.
Back from your sojourn learning Spanish in Spain.
A little bit. Watching a lot of Spanish football. Mm. And must say, whilst I was there, I thought Spanish teams this year, not very good. You know, probably at their lowest level for a few years.
Right.
And then lo and behold, they knock two of the English sides out. Yeah. So clearly I was completely wrong.
How do you say 2 goals in 4 minutes?
Dos goles.
Dos goles en cuatro minutos.
Qué bo. Un plato.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay, that's right, everybody. The Spanish doing the double over the Premier League sides. Spanish press, Eurotunnel was their headline on the Chelsea yeah. game, which I quite like that. While I think the majority of their column inches this week were dedicated to the game at Old Trafford. Not so much Sevilla's triumph, although they certainly celebrated that, but what they called the troglodyte football played by Man United. Jules, to quote one Spanish paper, Sevilla won and so did football.
Yeah, I can see that for sure. I mean, I think we all knew what Mourinho was like, and we saw that in the first leg where they decided to go for just let's not attack, let's just keep a 0-0 draw. You never thought, though, that he would do that in the second leg, you know, at home where they still had to score because, you know, a 0-0 draw wouldn't have been enough. And somehow play with no intensity, no creativity, no idea. I mean, how on earth do you start Fellaini in a game like this? I'm not even talking about Pogba. I'm just saying.
It's that GQ photo shoot that he was involved in where he tied his throw up in those kind of Minnie Mouse ears.
Yeah.
Because that was a disturbing choice.
We'll come on to Man United's tactics in a second, but many were surprised by Sevilla's success. Were you?
Defensively, they haven't been very good this season. Hmm. But if you don't put them under pressure, they can play and play and play and not concede. That's the thing. So I was surprised by the sense that United didn't go for them because defensively, they're not very good.
Right.
But I wasn't surprised by the fact that they could play football and that Correa is a very good player, Vasquez is a very good player, Banega is a very good player.
And Ben Yedder, were you surprised by him?
I'm not surprised because I love him dearly.
Okay,
Have I ever mentioned that he's from Paris?
Tell us, it would be surprising if he wasn't from
true,
Paris.
True, that's very, very true. But
Julien.
It's a wonderful story.
Okay, go on.
It really is, and on many levels. Not the fact that, you know, he comes on and scored 2 at Old Trafford, which is, you know, incredible. But also the fact that, for example, he never went through an academy. He didn't go to the academy system like most players go through. You know, you sign at 8 or 9 or 10, 12, whatever, and you spend your years learning how to play and how to become a professional player into an academy, and then you make your debut for that team, that first team, whatever, or you go on loan. He didn't do that. He was born in Sarcelles. Mm. He was a school friend of Riyad Mahrez, for example, the same generation in Sarcelles. And then no one never picked him up. He played a lot of futsal, like a lot of the Brazilians do, for example. That's where the technique... That's where he got all that sort of technique skills and technical ability. But also played 11 aside, but no one ever picked him up. So he kept going, played in the lower leagues in France. When he was 18, played in the fourth division for Alphaville, where I actually saw him play.
Alphaville?
Yeah, Alphaville, which is near where
wow,
I grew up.
Imagine if his career took him to Japan.
Oh, it's a frightening video, that Alphaville.
Yes, it is.
Ben Yedder, even though he plays in Spain, has got more goals against the top six in England than Romelu Lukaku this season. He's got 5.
Oh,
it's a bit harsh, really. It's a bit harsh because Lukaku over the last few weeks has actually done quite well and did score, even though he was playing in a... Even though United's approach didn't really do him any favours, I thought, last night.
But to reiterate, so 3 goals against Liverpool and then crazy game at the Sanchez Pizjuan and 2 here.
Mm. So it's 5 goals for Ben Yedder against England's top six.
And to finish on Ben Yedder, it shows that if you believe in yourself, you know, and even if you're not getting picked up.
Just a little bit of magic.
Yeah, no, but you need to have talent. But you see what I mean? It's a Conte story, or it's a Ribery story, or it's a Vardy story. That's the kind of stories that you can still make it at that level, even if you don't go through the mold of going to an academy when you're young.
How old is he now?
27.
27.
And he should be called up today after we finish the show, unfortunately, for the first time ever by Deschamps, for the two friendlies with France against Colombia and Russia at the end of the month.
It is an amazing story. Also for Sevilla in general, the first time they reached the Champions League quarterfinals in 60 years.
Yeah. They lost 10-2 on aggregate to Real Madrid.
Is that what happened back then?
Back in 1958.
It's almost as long since Man United won a knockout game in the Champions League. BT Sports pointing out in their tweet that since they last did, Real Madrid have won the Champions League on three occasions, and since Man United last won a Champions League knockout match, Leicester have won promotion to the Premier League and then won the actual competition, which is remarkable, isn't it? All right, well, let's talk then about the team described as rich in millions but mean of spirit. What's the point in spunking 300 million on players to just hoof it upfield to Lukaku? Jose Mourinho, I don't think anybody yet has defended his tactics on Tuesday night. Michael, would you like to have a go?
No, well, I thought the only people who did defend his tactics to a certain extent were the pundits on BT, actually. I thought Steven Gerrard was very reluctant to criticise Mourinho, which I thought was strange because this was a massive failing from him. You know, he's always criticised for being too defensive, but it's often in terms of people saying, oh, it's not just about winning, it's also about putting on a show, putting on a spectacle. But that wasn't the case here. It just wasn't the optimum approach against this Sevilla side, who have a couple of very good technical centre-backs, Kier and Longley. But they're not strong. They're not good under pressure. United only attacked for the last 10 minutes, really, and created three or four good chances. It was just the wrong way to go about the game. And, you know, the Sevilla players afterwards, I think Nzonzi was saying, you know, me and Benega, we were amazed that we weren't pressed at all. We just had so much time on the ball. And that's what led to the first Sevilla goal, which I thought was a really lovely move, actually. Mm. But Benega is the, you know,
he can do what he wants.
Another thing on Benega, he got booked after 5 minutes. And I thought, well, he's in trouble here. He's the kind of player who is, you know, almost a bit of a Jack Wilshere, prone to just diving in. But he had no one running past him. He didn't have to make another tackle for the rest of the game. I thought it was just so timid and so meek from United, and just they didn't have to play that way in this game. I get United playing that way against someone like Liverpool, who is so good on the counter-attack. Mm. But Sevilla, they're good technically, but they're a bit, as I said to James earlier, they're a little bit Jose Antonio Reyes Sevilla. They're very technical, very neat, but put them under physical pressure, and I think.
Well, they've conceded 42 league goals this season, 12 in six Champions League matches, so they certainly do concede. And you mentioned Liverpool there. The curious thing was that the weekend's match against Liverpool had offered a perfect blueprint almost of how to get the best out of this side.
Yeah, they didn't offer anything going forward on Tuesday, I thought, with the exception of Lukaku, who I thought came towards play well and was laying the ball off to Sanchez on the left, but no, they didn't offer anything. I thought to play that midfield in a home game against a relatively weak team, you just don't have the tools to break them down. It was a really poor performance.
Well, Mourinho did at least adopt an offensive approach in the post-game press conference.
By saying it's not uncommon for United to lose here because I've won here.
On one hand, you have to admire the staggering chutzpah of the man. But is he not just underlining the fact when he says, I came here and won with Real Madrid and Porto, the fact that he used to make headlines for winning things and now it's almost like he's a spent force? And do you think he's crossed the line with Man United by adopting that approach?
I think the game has moved on in many respects from Mourinho, at least at the highest level, where more has to be expected of a team than to just basically stay compact, keep it tight, and maybe nick a goal on the counter-attack. The number of teams now, we see that are influenced by what Pep Guardiola has done and are ambitious about how they play, not only at home, but away from home, I think is pretty damning for Mourinho. Manchester United make more in 3 months than Sevilla make in an entire year, and a lot of what Sevilla make is from selling players. United have no excuse for the football that is served by Jose Mourinho. It's clear that another manager could get more out of those players, could put on a better spectacle.
Do you think that's clear to Man United now?
Well, I mean, they've given him a new contract.
This post-game press conference represents a change in his position at the club.
Look, I mean, it's curious how, you know, whenever Mourinho signs a new contract at a club within a year or so, he's out. When United spend 100 million on Paul Pogba and you see Pogba at odds with Mourinho, not playing either because he's injured or because there's a difference of opinion on where he should play, United have to look at that and think the manager is not maximising, you know, the assets that we're putting at his disposal, which we're, you know, we can afford to buy, but at the same time are at great expense. And, you know, I think he is incapable of changing. You know, when he got the Chelsea job the second time around, he said, "I'm different now." He's shown he's not different. If anything, things radicalise quicker with Mourinho in terms of his relationship with the squad. And it's clear that the team, the way that the team plays doesn't try and change either. He's got one way and that's it. He's quite one-dimensional.
I think what he said at the end is an insult to the club, to the fans, even to the players as well. And just to go back on the tactics that Coxie mentioned and James mentioned, if you go and play that defensive, and clearly there was not much intent to go forwards, at least be solid defensively, but they conceded 21 shots in that game. I think the last time a Manchester United team conceded more was against Real Madrid 5 or 6 years ago, which was like 23 or 24. How can you be so defensive and yet concede so many shots and obviously concede goals? It's just like beyond me. They didn't do anything right. They didn't defend well. They didn't attack well. They didn't press at all, as we just mentioned. What on earth did they do in that game? How did they think they would win the game?
Do you think that was all because of Mourinho's instructions, or did the players just not follow his instructions?
Oh, no, I think they would have followed. That's the way he wanted them to play. And I think he probably said, you know, let's take it easy.
He probably didn't ask Sanchez to lose the ball. How many times was it? 42 times?
Is that real? Do you think that's real? 42 times? That's a lot.
He's average. We've mentioned it before. More or less every game he plays, he gives the ball up 30 times. That would be on trend.
Well, I'm a little bit sceptical about the use of these stats, because if you look at who's given the ball away the most in the Premier League this year, I think the top two are Christian Eriksen and Kevin De Bruyne. So I think
they take risks.
The stat to focus on, you don't need the extra stats. The stat to focus on is he scored one goal and he hasn't created any. Mm. Just on Mourinho, he has actually said this kind of thing before after a game. Manchester United lost 3-0 to someone last year, might have been Chelsea. And in his programme notes for the next game, he said, "Well, it's nothing new because when I was with Chelsea, I beat Manchester United 3-0 and I beat them 3-1 on two occasions." Yes. I don't understand how that's meant to console the supporters.
Can we just salute Vincenzo Montella?
Yes.
I wonder when that was going to come.
because they lost at the weekend to Valencia, which meant they basically said adios to the Champions League. They can't qualify for it. They're 11 points off the top four, I think, in La Liga. And yet, Sevilla have a great pedigree in cup competitions. That's why, regardless of what they've been doing in domestic competition, you had to recognise that they would be a threat in this game. They knocked Atletico Madrid out of the Copa del Rey. They're in the Copa del Rey final at the end of April against Barcelona. They're in the quarterfinals of the Champions League for the first time. And, Montella, when apparently they were back at the hotel after this game in Deansgate Hilton with his celebrity friends Alexander Skarsgård. I had no idea that he was good pals with him, sharing
That's a good looking pair.
Exactly. Sharing a glass of whiskey on the rocks.
Damn.
and toasting to their success. So
Were you on Tuesday night? That's where that's where it was at.
Yeah. So I've got a quiz question about this game, right?
Ah,
I'm gonna say now, then I leave you boys a bit of time and our listeners to try to guess, and then at the end I reveal the answer. But only four players have scored two or more goals in a Champions League knockout match at Old Trafford. Benítez there being one, so
Ronaldo?
There's three more for you to find.
Ronaldo?
There's three more for you to find. Do you want the answer? Surely.
Well, Ronaldo.
Which Ronaldo?
Well, Phenomenal.
Oh, Phenomenal.
So there's
three.
Two more.
So two more.
Kaká got two.
Kaká got two. Oh my God, I thought it would be harder than that. So you've got just one more.
Let's save the best for last for a bit later on.
Yes.
It's going to be someone French, isn't it?
Paris born and bred.
Maybe not.
Wow, that's fascinating, isn't it? Huh. Anyway, Man United, of course, still on for the single, the FA Cup. Yeah. Which they're in the quarterfinals. Brighton will be visiting them this Saturday. Replay of the 83 final, just to finish off this chunk. What do we think? Huh? Man United to come like wounded beasts out of the gate and attack the Seagulls?
Even if United lose anyway, it's okay, because Mourinho, I'm sure, before lost lost in the FA Cup at some point, or even won.
Or beat someone in the
FA Cup too.
So Glenn Murray is the big goal threat at one end, and Dunk or Bong is the big goal threat at the other, probably. I mean, Brighton home goals, it's a joke that keeps on giving. Anthony Knockout's banned, of course, after his challenge at the weekend against Everton. What do we think is going to happen here? Is Mourinho going to swallow his pride and throw Pogba back in? Would that be the right thing to do? What do you think?
I expect Pogba will come back. I'd be surprised if Mata doesn't come back as well, because they need that creativity. I think United will probably win. I mean, Brighton play very deep. They depend on the counter-attack, but they do defend in a kind of organised manner. The one thing I think will give Brighton a chance is that United will play Sergio Romero in goal, and he's a perfectly competent goalkeeper, but De Gea has been astonishing this year, has saved them on so many occasions. And even though Romero's, you know, probably a mid-table standard goalkeeper, that's a big drop. And they just rely on De Gea so much that if he's not there, I think they're a much worse side.
Is this a good time to be facing Man United, or a bad time, James?
I think it depends entirely on what team Mourinho puts out, because you know, that's what staggered me on Tuesday night, is that he went away from what had worked for him in the second half against Palace, worked for him against Liverpool. You know, all of a sudden you had Rashford playing out on the right instead of on the left, where he seemed to do very well. Sanchez being on the left instead of in the middle. And, you know, I think it was interesting to see sort of Lingard in midfield, because both Lingard and Fellaini got so far ahead of the ball that it was just Matic in front of the defence. He had too much to cover. So I think if he were to go back to what worked for them in what has been a quite encouraging period for United, you think of the Chelsea, the Palace and the Liverpool games, then, yeah, of course, they should be favourites to get this. But I do think it depends how much, you know, damage Mourinho does to himself and his prospects with his team. Really.
Yeah. Well, the other bad news, of course, for Man United this week was Man City winning on Monday night away at Stoke, both goals from David Silva. And that means, of course, now that City are on track, if they can beat Everton in the next game, to win the title against United in about 3 weeks' time. Oof. Hey, we're going to talk about more Europe. We're going to talk about more FA Cup quarterfinals and various other things after this.
You're listening to the Totally Football Show, sponsored by Paddy Power, the home of the Money Back Special. Keep listening to the end of the podcast to find out more.
Thanks to Duncan Alexander for pointing out that Arsenal are now the only London club left in Europe. Huh. There you go. In action this evening, Thursday night, 2-0 up, two away goals from their first leg against Milan at San Siro. Of course, this is following Chelsea's exit from the Champions League. And a relatively close game, no? I mean, there was one player, was the difference, is that fair?
Yeah, I think they played really well, Chelsea. I mean, the start, obviously, is a big blow, although it didn't really change much because they had to score before a 0-0, they still had to score, you know, 1-0 down anyway. But especially the start of the second half, they played really well, and they were a bit unlucky not to score. There's the free kick of Alonso on the post, there's a few chances. Conte has one at the end of the first half as well. They've got some early in the second half. It's just...
they played well, but one man played better.
Exactly. When you have that guy against you, you just... anything can happen at any time, you know. But the lesson as well, I think, and it's funny because it's something Mourinho says a lot, and is that if you can exploit the mistake or the error from the opposition, then you've got a big chance to win. And when you think about Fabregas losing the ball on that second goal from Barcelona, and the problem with Messi is that you could lose the ball on the halfway line, where against any other players,
right,
it's not going to create much, but Messi gets that ball back and creates a goal. And then when Azpilicueta loses the ball on the third one, again, for many players and many teams, that wouldn't have led to anything. But with Messi, it leads to another goal. And I think when you make two mistakes like that against him, then you get punished.
That Dembele goal, though, it wasn't just Fabregas losing the ball. Prior to that, Hazard had had a couple of options and had just basically smacked it straight into the nearest central defender.
True, but Fabregas, there's no way at that level Fabregas can lose the ball like he did.
Sure, but Hazard had a poor night, would you say, on a night that a lot of people were saying...
I thought Willian was, again, their best attacking player, ran purposely and was at the heart of the best things that they created. I think Courtois had a had a poor night as well, getting done through his legs twice. Yeah. And also,
is he actually not that good, Courtois? Has he gone? Has his form taken a real dip? Because it's not the first time of late that his errors have cost Chelsea.
You rate Courtois, don't you, Coxie?
Well, I did rate him very highly. I think he's had a poor season. I think he's actually gone backwards since he moved to Chelsea. I mean, he's clearly not happy at Chelsea. He said from the outset he didn't really want to play there. He keeps on angling for a move to Real Madrid, who won't have been impressed by his performance against Spanish opposition this week. And he's not very popular amongst Chelsea fans, it seems, because he keeps on linking himself with a move to Madrid. So I think at Atletico, I think he was the best goalkeeper in Europe. But on current form, not so much.
All right.
He's conceded a few goals through his legs over the last 18 months or so. And it was interesting in his post-match interview, he basically blamed it on being too tall.
Right.
Did you realise that? He said, I'm so tall that even if I'm stood with my legs in a normal position, there's just too much space there.
He's too much between his legs?
What? He can't close his legs? Because he's too tall. It's a thing, he's so tall that to go down, it's obviously it takes longer than if you were shorter, but between the legs, just close your bloody legs.
Close your bloody legs, I think, says Julien Laurent.
Messi deserves, well, obviously deserves enormous credit, but he's playing in a bit of a new role this season. You know, we've seen him before be on the right, plays a false nine. Now he's playing as a kind of classic Argentine number 10 behind Suarez. And his game is almost less about goals now, and yet he still scores at a rate of about one a game. But it's interesting that, you know, this is the position he's always really wanted to play. He grew up in Argentina. He wanted to be in that kind of Maradona role. And it's only the age of 29, really, where he's actually playing in the position he's always wanted to play, which is incredible when you think that he's essentially become the player we all think is probably the best of all time. He's found a new dimension to his game, and he's just, when he plays like that, he's just incredible.
100 Champions League goals, and last night he scored one with his right, one with his left. He set up Dembélé by basically taking all of Chelsea's defenders to his side. Another kind of underlining again why he is the best player in the world.
Done with such ease as well. From a Premier League point of view, Dan Billingham asking how Premier League sides have managed to go 7 Champions League matches now without a victory. Duncan Alexander again, pointing out that Leicester are the only Premier League side to knock out a side from Spain in the last 6 seasons. Leicester.
Yeah, and that was Sevilla.
Yeah, it was, wasn't it?
And even they had more of a go than United, despite the fact that Leicester's game plan was all about sitting back.
Should the Premier League, as it goes from 5 participants down to 2, should it be concerned?
Well, I think you have to take each one case by case. I think in United's respect, you have to, I think, that put that on the manager. I think in Chelsea's respect, it's hard to look at what Conte could have done more, really, I think. And you are playing against a team with the best player in the world. Mm. And, you know, in Spurs's respect, I mean, they played very well. For 170 of the 180 minutes, they were probably the better team against Juventus, and yet they got outflanked by Allegri for being too late in reacting to the changes that he made in the second half at Wembley. So
still, though, 3 teams out of 5 knocked out of the last 16.
Mm.
It's not a great look. Elsewhere in the Champions League, of course, the draw coming up on Friday, and it will feature Roma and Bayern. Bayern, who beat Besiktas 8-1 on aggregate.
Your Pankers has won 11 Champions League games in a row.
That's a record.
Yeah. First ever.
First ever. Sorry, Jules, yeah. Roma's aggregate scored 2-2, but they went through on away goals, that 1-0 on the night. Them scoring was feasible for me. Them keeping a clean sheet, I had my doubts about, but they just about did it. Largely thanks to their ball boy.
Who was, not bundled over the advertising hoardings by...
Well, he saw an opportunity, let's say.
Yeah. His legs dangling over the end. He did... a lot of people were, I think, getting in touch with him on social media to ask if he was okay, and he was like, no, it's fine. But it was amusing.
So this
scene is
late on and plays over on the other side, but the ball goes out towards him and he's dithering around, and Ferreira goes over and gets the ball off him. And you don't see it close up. I mean, there is now a video of it, but on the coverage, it did look like he pushed him head over heels over the advertising hoardings, but he really didn't. But anyway, it was enough to spark a little bit of a melee among the players and that.
Do you remember Hazard at Swansea?
I was going to say that was so punch. Good.
The Hazard one.
A ball boy who was as tall as him.
Right.
And was holding the ball, and he saw, like, Well, it's not
give him a
punch,
kick.
Yeah, give him a kick.
Because he was lying on top of the ball.
Yeah, remember that? That was 4 or 5 years ago.
One of my favourite incidents in recent years. That was incredible. And the best thing was that someone found his Twitter account that evening, and he tweeted early in the day, hashtag needed for time wasting. to have that plan and to execute it so well.
Brilliantly.
Incredible.
No, I'm not giving the ball. I don't know which team it was with Cristiano Ronaldo, of the ball boy who's there hanging onto the ball, and Ronaldo saying, give me the ball, and the ball boy's just shrugging at him like, what? So Ronaldo runs over to get it, and the ball boy throws it straight past him. And to Ronaldo's credit, because at this point you'd be really...
cross.
You would be cross. Ronaldo just turns around and kind of goes, okay, and gets on with the game. But it was beautifully
done. Michel
Platini,
on ball boys to finish, Michel Platini used to say that at the time when he was in Italy with Juventus, you didn't have so many balls as well than you could have now. But he said that when you go to Napoli, they used to go to Napoli and the ball was going out, the ball boys used to get the ball and do keeping up ease. So you were there waiting for the ball to come back, and the ball boys at Napoli were doing keeping up ease, passes between the two, just waste time. And I just think it's brilliant.
We could maybe do this on Golazzo if we were, you know, talking about ball boys. But Passarella, back in the 80s, when he was playing for Inter, kicked a ball boy so hard that he got banned for 6 games.
Really?
Hazard got a ban as well, didn't he? Didn't he get one match ban or something?
Yeah, he was sent off, yeah. There was another outside agent in the Besiktas Bayern game, which was a cat on the pitch, which held up the play. Always exciting.
Yeah. I mean, I have a little hope for the quarterfinal draw.
Yes.
I'd love either Roma to get Sevilla, because then you have sort of Monchi and Montella and Di Francesco, who were, you know, good friends. And then all Roma and Liverpool, where you have Salah going back. And it's good. Yeah, I like it.
Man City and Roma, you got Dzeko. Dzeko, of course, who scored and who said afterwards, this was the reason I stayed at Roma, because everyone thought he was going to Chelsea's.
Yeah.
He would have been cup tied. He said, I stayed at Roma for the Champions League. It is an enchanting city, of course. Roma in there, one of two Italian sides in the quarters. Mm-hmm. First time we've had that in a while. Juventus, obviously, through three from La Liga, Barcelona, Real Madrid, and Sevilla. Bayern Munich out of the Bundesliga, and Man City and Liverpool. There's no French sides there, John.
No, there's not. PSG not there. But when I saw United play...
Yes.
As a PSG fan myself, I was like, at least over the two games with Real Madrid, once it was Real Madrid and not Sevilla, and at least we tried in that first game especially, not in the second game, but United didn't try at all, neither in the first one or in the second one, apart from the last 10 minutes.
Indeed. All right, quarterfinals then of the FA Cup after this.
Listeners, you know there's more to football than inverted pyramids, XG and young millionaires with too many tattoos. Yes, football's fundamentally a simple game, but you can't truly understand all dimensions of the game without understanding the modern world. And you can't understand the modern world without understanding its most popular sport. Game of Our Lives is a new podcast series hosted by the football historian David Goldblatt. It tackles themes like human nature, globalisation and geopolitics through the prism of the beautiful game. Just like the Totally Football Show, sort of. But you can bet we'll be listening. The first episode is out now and focuses on the cinema of the pitch. Here's a taster with filmmaker Werner Herzog giving his view of your typical Super Sunday from a cinematographer's perspective.
I like to see a wider shot of the field and how the entire field all of a sudden is moving. What is the opponent's team doing? How do they move their entire team a little bit more to the left or to the right? So I like to see certain patterns that emerge very quickly.
If you want to learn more about why football matters, make sure you listen to Game of Our Lives on Apple Podcasts and everywhere else you get your audio on demand. The Game of Our Lives podcast with David Goldblatt. Subscribe now.
Werner Herzog. We're all fans of him. You're also a big fan of David Goldblatt, Michael, is that right?
Yeah, he's the author of The Ball Is Round, which I think is probably the definitive football book ever written. I genuinely think it might be one of the most comprehensive books written on any subject ever.
Really?
It's about 1,000 pages charting football history in every country from the beginning of football to the modern era. It's just an incredible piece of work.
And at the end, the conclusion, the ball is round.
No, that was the starting point, actually.
Oh, I see. Okay.
I think it comes from a quote from Pelé or someone who says, football's different in every country, but the ball is always round.
Oh, I see. Okay.
One of those Pelé quotes, which don't really mean anything.
Right. Like Nicky Butt, best player.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I mean, it's easy to laugh, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Let's do something more positive instead. and mention that this Monday night, there's something pretty special for football fans. It's not a match, but it is at Vicar Street, James Horncastle, Julien Laurent, and DJ Pat Nevin doing Totally Football live in Dublin.
Pat Masterflex.
And the Furious Three. Word. Yeah. Ben says, producer Ben says there's one ticket left.
One.
Really? I don't know if he means it or if he's just being, you know, producer Ben-esque.
Is it hidden somewhere? Is it hidden somewhere in Dublin and the first guy who finds it?
That would be great. In a chocolate bar.
Yeah, something like
brilliant.
That.
Brilliant. Ticketmaster.ie. I don't know, you know, and try your luck. Either that or the touts, who must be licking their lips over this. Yeah. Ben is keen for you to know that there'll be stories too hot for the pod. But if there's no tickets left, Ben, why torment people with the knowledge? If there were tickets left, it would be worth me telling you about some of the stuff we're going to talk about, which a lot of it's too hot for the pod. Saddam Hussein fighting with teammates, all that kind of good stuff. Yeah. But, you know, anyway, also exciting and available to everybody, Michael, everyone, is the Totally Football Quiz. That's right. It happens every Friday at 12:30 GMT. The address? Why? It's live at facebook.com/thetotallyfootballshow. It features fiendish and fascinating questions set by our friends at Opta. And basically everyone who logs on and takes part just by giving us a like on Facebook gets to win something. That something, Jules, is knowledge.
Yes.
Yeah. Because you can take away a lot of those questions and use them in quizzes like you've done with your...
Exactly.
Yeah. But there are also some prizes. There's a Borussia Mönchengladbach home shirt provided by our friends from classicfootballshirts.co.uk, who I spent a very entertaining Saturday evening with, actually, in Manchester at the National Football Museum. They'd organised a big thing, a display. They've got about 500,000 items.
Ooh,
oh, wow. And they had a display of 500 of the most iconic. And they'd gone large on it, to be fair. They'd flown in Ruud Gullit, or arranged for him to be there. I don't know where he's coming from. They'd flown in the woman who designed, Ina Fransman, who designed the what's recognised as the most iconic, certainly international jersey of all time, the Germany 1990 with the line, the asymmetric line.
Yeah.
And actually, reading up on this prior to the thing, I'd stumbled across this theory that the line isn't random. It actually represents Germany World Cup performances. So if you take a look at the kind of points on the graph, and by all means Google a picture of this while I'm talking it through. So 1974, they win the World Cup. And that's up on the shoulder. And then it drops right down. The next World Cup, they go out the group stage, 78. Then it goes up and it plateaus across 2 points, mirroring the fact that they reach the final of the next two World Cups without winning. Yeah. And then it goes up again to the top of the next shoulder for 1990, which is when the shirt was designed for. What did they do in 1990, James Horncastle?
They won.
Yeah.
So I pointed this out to Ian and she said, no, it was just completely in her head. But obviously some force was acting through her. Also that night, Ruud Gullit... Oh, Juan Mata turned up. It was the star. And Jari Littmanen.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And Ruud Gullit, I asked him about that Holland shirt, another of the iconic jerseys of yesteryear from 88. He said he never liked it. He said he thought it was one of the ugliest shirts he'd ever seen.
Oh, wow.
Oh, wow.
So he was used to wearing that lovely Milan shirt at that time.
That's true.
Mediolanum one.
Did Ruud Gullit talk about when he persuaded... Was it Feyenoord to change their kit? He arrived there and he thought that their black shorts looked too...
No, he didn't. Yeah. That would have been a great thing to ask him.
Yeah, sorry. Oh, well. I would have told you if I knew, but...
Right. That'll be for classic football shorts anyway.
Did you say they had 500,000 items in there?
Supposedly. I don't think individual items. They bought up a lot of kind of remaindered stock from clubs, so...
Okay.
But yeah, let me go to their website, which just happens to be classicfootballshirts.co.uk, and you'll find a lot of it's, you know, like ridiculous prices. They even have the David Beckham's match underwear there.
Oh, I've bought a not vintage Gary Lineker's, Sampdoria shirt from what not the Scudetto winning season from Classic Football Shirts.
And how much did you pay for that, James?
I can't remember how much I paid, but I remember David Ginola, when we were working at BT, insisted that he buy it off me, and I refused. He said he would give me anything for it.
But anything?
Yeah.
His hair.
But it goes to show how much he loved that shirt, which is probably the best shirt in football.
Yeah, it's up there, isn't it? Up there. Now, Saturday sees the return of the FA Cup quarterfinals.
And Mark Hughes, James.
And Mark Hughes, who will be debuting on the Saints bench as they travel to Wigan. That's on Sunday. What do we make of this appointment? Wardy asking, great tweet this, with Mark Hughes going to Southampton, will he keep Stoke up after all?
That's naughty.
It's getting interesting, isn't it? I was talking to a Stoke fan during the week who reckoned that their team is going to get extra impetus for the run-in because they will be in direct competition. They'll be battling the less-than-popular Hughes for the relegation spots.
Yeah, I'm not sure whether that's true. I mean, if that is true, you have to wonder about the motivation levels of some of these players. And you should just want to go out and win the game. It's not just about screwing everyone over all the time, is it?
Yeah, although that's a powerful human emotion, isn't it?
It is, certainly. Yeah.
What about their decision to hire Hughes in the first place?
I think it's quite a good move, to be honest. I mean, they need someone who can do a job over a short period of time. I know that Hughes' stock isn't particularly high after the way that this season went. But as I've said previously, he did a very good job with Stoke in his first few seasons. He improved their league position while overhauling probably the most defined and old-fashioned style of football. You know, that's the way they played before he came. And I think Southampton are quite a good team on paper. They got a good starting 11, maybe not great squad depth. But I think it's a good move. I think he'll give them a bit of a shot in the arm. They seemed really bored under Pellegrino. Well, more than anything else, they just seemed bored. So yeah. I don't think it's a bad move.
Scoring goals was a massive problem. Let me blow your mind with a stat. Chances created in the Premier League, top six for chances created, are, you know, the big clubs, yeah? Seventh place are Southampton. Isn't that amazing? So they have actually, according to stats, which I agree, you do have to take with a pinch of salt and place in context. Yeah. They have been creating chances. It's just that they've got...
Yeah, well, I mean, Hughes himself was a very fine finisher once of Southampton, although probably the most famous incident he was involved with at Southampton was at the Dell when he scored a goal and the ball bounced off the advertising hoarding in, like behind the net, bounced back into play, and they just played on because the referee and linesman didn't see it.
Incredible.
Wow, that's why we need VAR.
Yeah.
But I think the problem for him is that, five of their eight away games are away from home.
That's right.
In the season, and they've got to play City, Arsenal and Chelsea. I would fancy Wigan to go through in this tie, because remember what Mark Hughes was up to in the Cup early this season, went out to Bristol City, went out to Coventry City. Given Wigan's pedigree this season in knocking out, well, not only City, but other Premier League clubs as well.
Yeah. Bournemouth, West Ham.
Yeah.
They've got the top scorer in the competition, who is, of course,
on fire.
The extremely flammable Will Grigg.
Yeah. I just, on Southampton's fixtures, I'm not sure that's necessarily a bad thing, because I think Chelsea, Arsenal and Man City might have other priorities rather than the league when those fixtures come around. So, you know, Chelsea are very good at sacking off games where they don't care anymore.
Well, Chelsea only have the FA Cup, and they might not even have that after this weekend when they have to travel to Leicester, who look a great shout for being FA Cup dark horses. A game that will see Drinkwater and Kante back at their old club, and Chelsea up against the former Southampton manager, the now, I think, probably quite missed Claude Puel. What do you think about Leicester's chances of doing Chelsea?
Yeah, I think they have... a big chance to do it. I think it was interesting to see how he dealt with how Puel dealt with the FA Cup before. For example, against Fleetwood, it was very much like a B or even a C team. But then gradually he put better players back in that competition as well. And I think you'll have a full strength team, you expect, for Leicester at the weekend. And I think at home as well, I think they've done some really good things with Puel.
Right. Of course, nowadays they don't have too much else to worry about, do they? Their league position looks safe. Chelsea, by contrast, absolutely have to worry about the league because they're 4 points outside the top four positions at the moment. They can't afford to slack off too much in the domestic.
They have won four of their last five games at the King Power. Conte
have they?
Has done pretty well going over there. Although when they won in September, Morata was in a encouraging start to life at Chelsea, which has obviously faded quite dramatically. I would still fancy Chelsea in this game.
Right, Leicester fresh, of course. They didn't have to make that trip to Catalunya
on the ice,
chase Messi around for 90 minutes. Swansea taking on Spurs. Kane news about 6 weeks. He's saying, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That probably means Llorente back in for this one against his former club.
Against his former
club. He scored against them earlier in the season, didn't he?
He can play Son as well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
More than Llorente. Clearly, that's what he did against Bournemouth instead of bringing Llorente on.
Yeah. Swansea haven't beaten Spurs since 1982. Their last four meetings with Tottenham have finished with an aggregate score of 10 goals conceded and just one scored. Of course, this was before Carlos Carvalhal turned up, but interesting. Producer Ben chipping in on the subject of Heung-min Son, who's been probably the surprise story, one of the best stories of this season for Spurs now, that he might have to do 2 years military service.
That was something that they knew when they signed him, though. Yeah. And I think they tried to delay it as much as they could, or not having it happening at all. I still find it
how
really
would that
weird.
Work?
For example, Israeli players have to do their, I think it's 3 years for them, whether they're football players, doctors, you know, whatever, studying, they have to do them.
I remember that the Lever, when that existed, they had a football team, and they basically would bring, we went down to Naples and we did a feature, and there was Del Piero and everyone like in their fatigues, but all they did was basically hang around the barracks and go out and play a bit of football on a five-a-side
pitch.
Yeah,
the French as well had that, because there was even a tournament or something. I think the French won the sort of military World Cup or something like that back in early 80s or something.
Okay. Wow. French with a military victory.
Oh, here we go. Sorry, Colonel Nelson.
It was a big name manager who was in charge of the military team. Was it Le Maire?
Yeah, Le Maire, who then won the Euros in 2000,
he spent 10 years in charge of the military football team,
ridiculous.
Which is an incredible preparation for, you know, managing the actual national team.
Yeah, right. But I think they realised it was a lot of money wasted as well.
Heung-min Son, but it's just a long way to have to go. You know, I don't know how they'll.
I know the guy who worked on that Son deal when he moved to Spurs, and said all of a sudden, you know, when you're doing your sort of evaluation of a player and how to sign it, and you have to figure out whether he can be called up for military service or not. You know, it's a bit of a nightmare. It's not something you expect to do. You know,
no. And the worry is that the way Donald Trump is, there's every chance he could get called up. It could be needed in action.
One of the things that struck me about Son, which I know he was quick, but I didn't know if this came out during the Juventus game, is that he's been clocked as the quickest player with the ball at his feet in the world.
What?
It's like 40 kilometres an hour, something like that. Maybe it's because Ronaldo's, you know, got a little bit old and that sort of thing. But yeah, pretty impressive. No?
I don't believe any of these things, honestly. Every time you
see
ruin
it.
There was one a few years ago where they had Richard Dunn as one of the quickest players in the Premier League. They must have inverted the scale.
He's got long legs.
Yeah. Prone to being nutmegged then.
Apparently we've just done our FA Cup quarterfinal preview. Look at that. That was quick. Well done, us. All right, listeners, that means we can move on to other exciting things like, what's been happening in Greece again? And other things, and your questions and stuff after this. Hey, Spurs fans, we're here to soothe that troubled brow with news that Son won't have to do his military service if his, under-23, under-21 fellow nationals win the Asian Games, which takes place when, Michael? August or September this year. If South Korea win that, all professional footballers or all members of the national side or the various national sides are exempt from national service.
What a source of motivation. I know. It's either that or screwing over Mark Hughes are the things that will really take you to the next level.
Yeah, I wonder which one would be more powerful. Anyway, moving on. Championship. Top three were all in action on Tuesday night. Wolves beat Reading. Cardiff won at Brentford 3-1. Villa lost 3-1 at home to QPR. So it's ever so tight.
It's a crazy league, though. You think that Villa beat Wolves, who have been cruising for most of the season, and then lose at home to QPR, who've been like pretty average, let's put it that way, all season. Yeah. Cardiff, seventh win in a row.
I can't make any sense of it. But luckily, Ian McIntosh and the Totally Football League show can, and that's a podcast that's available right now. Or you could just ditch sack that off and listen instead to Golazzo, which is another football podcast available right now, in which this week we'll be explaining why Roberto Mancini thought he was so special. The answer being he was.
Yeah.
He genuinely was really special. We'll also listen back to the craziest comeback we ever saw, I think, probably, and talk about what's happening this weekend. Sampdoria Inter, that Sunday morning, and the title race. Is it now all over in the title race? Juve, Wednesday night, beating Atalanta 2-0. They're now 4 points clear of Napoli. Is it over, James Horncastle?
I don't think so, because at the end of April there is a big game, which is Juventus against Napoli. You know, if they can win that, then that would maybe turn the tables back in Napoli's favour. Juventus also still in the Champions League. We'll have to see who they get in the quarterfinals. I think the first leg of the quarterfinal will come after a game against a resurgent Milan. They still have the Derby d'Italia as well, away at San Siro, where they lost twice last season. So it is a big advantage. 4 points, it feels a lot bigger when it's Juventus who have that advantage, but I don't think it's over yet.
Stand down, fat lady.
Yeah.
Not ready for you yet. Okay, in Greece, the Super League has been suspended after the gun-toting antics we described on Monday. France, has Ligue 1 been suspended?
Not yet.
What's happening to Lille? Because you also had a pitch invasion there, of course.
Yes, it was really bad. The matter is with the club and the police and everything. They're going to try to identify, you know, there were so many of them though on the pitch. It was really bad. So it'd be interesting to see what happened. Marcelo Bielsa, by the way, is still suing the club. I think he won 6.5 million euros for the way they sacked him.
Okay.
In November, at the end of November, which could be the final nail in their coffin financially, because as you know, they're already struggling financially.
Oh, I thought they had money because of Gerard Lopez.
The problem is, it's a bit like the AC Milan situation. Is like, when people are not really sure if he really has money. And the club seems to have been bought with a lot of loans and borrowings and things like that, which has made it not stable at all. And actually, the French league has already relegated Lille just with their finances, and they couldn't buy any players, for example, in January either, because of the French financial fair play system, saying that the way they run right now, is just not good enough.
Sorry, when did they relegate Lille?
In January.
Well, they're a point from safety.
They're 19th, I think, in the league. But the league has financially relegated them, if you want, already, because they don't have the backing financially and the security financially to stay in Ligue 1.
So they'll definitely be going down?
At the moment, yes. So it could change before June if the owner, Gerard Lopez, and people at the club actually give the proofs and the security that they actually have the money coming in to be able to stay in Ligue 1 if they stay, you know, sporting-wise. But it's looking really doom and gloom for them.
Wow, it's less than 10 years since they won the title with Eden Hazard, no?
It's incredible. And Eden, by the way, who put a tweet out on Sunday after what happened, saying, like, we need to all stick together. You know, you can't see things like this. I mean, fans punching their own players. I mean, like, it's one thing to protest because you're not happy by your owners or the way things are going with your team, but punching your own players who are still, like you said, only 1 point behind, you know, safety, so they still can stay up. I find that ridiculous.
Might be up there in motivation with, you know, trying to relegate Mark Hughes and stuff. Nobody wants to see that and without question.
No, the other interesting thing we have in Ligue 1 this weekend is the Nice PSG game on Sunday.
Okay.
It will be at 1 o'clock. Which is the earliest we've ever had a game, and is to accommodate the Chinese market, because the game will be live on Chinese TV. So what Nice did, which I think is quite good, because their fans were not so happy and saying, like, hang on, 1 o'clock on a Sunday, this is not time for football. So they've put out picnic tables. why are you laughing? They've got games for the children to make your family there. You can come early, you can play games, you have your picnic, you have a cool day.
Hopefully
it's going to be sunny. I think it was a good idea.
It's a great idea.
Are the picnic tables in view of the pitch?
It's just
outside.
Yeah, just outside. So you get there at 11:30.
I think ideally you'd want them, because it's still early for picnicking.
Yeah.
You'd want to actually have picnic areas in the stands.
Yeah.
Monaco could certainly do that.
No? 1 to 3 is lunchtime, surely.
Cov Inter Pit GB says, to me, it looks like good times on the horizon for Marseille. Does Julien agree? How far can they go in this year's Europa? And will they invest further in the summer?
Yes, I agree with him. It's good time. Rudy Garcia is doing a very good job there. They've got a mix, I think, of younger players and more experienced players that is working well.
Mm-hmm.
And they're third in the league. It looks like they might struggle to catch Monaco in second to go straight into the Champions League. They will have to go through the playoff if they finish third. But they've got a huge game on Sunday against Lyon in the Olympico, with Lyon, I think, 5 points behind them in fourth. So, you know, for that third place, it's a key game. But they're doing well in the Europa League as well. They won 3-1 in their first leg against Bilbao, and they're playing tonight in the second leg. So we won't know what happened there. But yeah, interesting time. And Frank Marcourt, the American billionaire who owns the club, still has some money left to invest. You know, when he bought the club 18 months ago, he said we'll have around 200 million to spend in transfers. So they spend 30 on Payet, for example. They spend some on Mitroglou. So they've bought Luis Gustavo as well, Costlaw, especially in wages. So they still have some chunk of that money available for transfer in the summer. So let's hope they can keep the best player, especially Tovin, and then add quality in the squad. And
you might actually have a title race next year. What do you think, Jules?
Yeah, because I think this Monaco team that Jardim is rebuilding is looking very promising.
Oh, yeah?
The problem is they will lose Lemar and Fabinho probably in the summer.
Mm.
So that's going to weaken them a bit. But I think they will be very competitive next year. Same with Marseille, and that very young Lyon team as well could be very competitive next year too. So, yeah,
we shall see. Paul Scholes is my hero. Says if Jules could choose any manager for his beloved PSG, who apart from Tony Pulis would it be?
Pep Guardiola? But that's an easy one. Okay. Everyone would pick Pep Guardiola.
Okay. Who do you think you'll get? Who do you think will be in charge next year?
I thought Conte was really the front runner, and it looks like Luis Enrique. In the last few hours, there's been contact between Luis Ferrer, who is the assistant to the sporting director until Enrique, and Luis Enrique. And you know what? This comes not long after Nasser El Khelaifi and Antero Henrique went to Brazil to meet Neymar and obviously and his dad. And if you go to Brazil and meet Neymar, obviously the question of the manager is going to come up, mm-hmm. because Neymar knows Emery is not there next season. And I wouldn't be surprised if Neymar said, okay, get Luis Enrique and then I'll be a happier guy. The whole camp will be happier, blah, blah, blah. And I hope it's not true, because a club shouldn't choose his manager because the best players say you should pick him. Even Messi tried, and Tata Martino came to Barcelona, and it was a disaster.
Mm.
So I don't know why Neymar should say to PSG, yeah, let's get Luis Enrique, because that's going to make me happy. So I'm hoping that's Neymar's just me thinking, because that comes so quickly after.
You think Neymar's going to be there next season?
I think so, yeah. I think that would be his last season.
Okay,
yeah.
All right. Now, Dulwich Hamlet update.
Yes, please.
They drew 0-0 with the Met on Tuesday. The Coppers went through 4-1 on penalties.
What was it, some sort of cup or something?
Hmm?
Was it in the cup? Was it
it was the Velocity Trophy.
Mm. Velocity Trophy.
But the big news is the fact that Southwark Council are moving towards compulsory purchase order of the Champion Hill ground, which is, it sounds like a very good outcome. Good. Michael Gale says, if Man United and Arsenal swap managers but kept the same players, would they both improve? I love questions like this. James, what do you think?
If Man United and Arsenal did?
Yes, swapped managers, kept the same players, would they both improve? Would Wenger get more out of this Man United side, or would Moo get more out of Ars?
Arsenal would improve, United would not.
Really? Ooh. It's a big shout. Michael, do you agree?
Yeah, I think I agree. I think a couple of United players would be happier under Wenger, but would they be higher than they are in the league? I don't think so. No.
Sure. I agree with the boys.
Okay. Oh, Dr. Jonathan Cable, thank you so much. We did ask if anybody knew the whereabouts of Karen Brady's article from 2011, in which she cast her mind, all of it, forward to the day that they move into the London Stadium, they being West Ham. The article's called "We'll Open with Olympic Parade." I won't read the whole thing out. Saturday, August 16th, 2014, the day has arrived. Finally, we kick off in the sold-out Olympic Stadium. Blah, 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 blah. England manager Harry Redknapp will be my guest after an amazing summer. Saw us get World Cup glory again. Blah, 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 blah. It's all about good old East End values, and for us now, the pie's the limit. We can look back with pride on February 2011 and know that we all did the right thing.
That didn't happen, did it? Surely.
What?
She wrote that.
She wrote that in 2011. That's... She might as well have written it on the side of a bus, for all it's worth. if you take my meaning. Yeah.
Listeners, do you like shaving and looking smooth and clean?
Yes!
But do you enjoy having to go to the shops for new razors and other shaving supplies?
No!
Well, Cornerstone gives you everything you need for a great shave, and they'll deliver it all right to your door. Cornerstone's super sharp, award-winning blades are engineered in Germany, which is always a good sign, and their range of balms, creams and exfoliators are all environmentally friendly, alcohol-free and suitable for the most sensitive skin. Get £10 off your first order and check out the range for yourself at cornerstone.co.uk/totally and find out why tens of thousands of men have switched over to Cornerstone.
Now, do you know what we haven't discussed yet? Jules, the answer to your quiz question from earlier, but also the Premier League, because there's four games going on this weekend. Yeah, that's right. You've got Liverpool-Watford. Liverpool, as we mentioned, only 4 points clear of Chelsea in the race for top four, so that's a big game. The other three matches, all very significant for the battle at the bottom. Bournemouth are hosting West Brom, who are 8 points from safety. Huddersfield, who are only 4 points above the bottom three, take on Crystal Palace, who are still a point off 17th, but have Wilfried Zaha back. And Stoke, who are one from safety, but of course have Mark Hughes' picture up in the dressing room now, are hosting Everton. What do you think? What do you think? Who's going to be the big winners there?
I fancy Palace to get a result, actually.
Yeah,
I know they've been struggling, but I think Zaha has maybe been the best, alongside Mara, has probably been the best player outside the top six teams. And Huddersfield, I mean, Palace haven't been keeping clean sheets recently, but Huddersfield, I think over half of their matches this season they haven't scored. They just don't have a consistent goal threat. And I still quite fancy Palace to stay up despite their recent run of bad form, I should say.
Mm. Palace, of course, haven't actually won a game since you left the country, Michael. So could be auspicious your return.
As Stoke are playing Everton at home.
That's right.
Okay, so Stoke will win.
Stoke to win. Palace to get the result at the John Smith Stadium against a Huddersfield side that enjoyed 80% or 82%, I think, possession against Swansea last weekend without actually finding the net once. And Julien, okay, Bournemouth, West Brom is an easy one to call. Yeah, what about Liverpool-Watford?
Oh, yeah, Liverpool at home.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Big time. Okay. Here's one final thought before we get the odds on all of that sort of thing. Universidad de Chile had a 1-0 victory over Vasco da Gama in the Copa Libertadores. Shortly after scoring the winner, Angelo Arauz was injured by his own teammates, who piled on top of him to celebrate. I always look at people jumping on top of other players to celebrate and thinking, no. You know, because if someone did that to me, my back would go immediately. And footballers, although generally more athletic than me in the main, are finely tuned machines of football. And, you can't jump on them. Anyway, he does, obviously something tweaks in his leg. Because as soon as the guy gets back off his shoulders, he kind of bends down and goes, oh, no. He had to come off straight away.
It happened the other day in the Premier League where, because so many of you, someone pushed the head of someone else who banged his nose on the back of the head of the guy who was in front of him.
And he got a broken nose.
He didn't get a broken nose, but you could see the celebration. I think it was Swansea.
Uh-huh.
And it was the defender Fernandez, I think, Alfie Mawson, I think, scored.
Yes.
They all like went on him, and someone just pushed his head on the back of the head of Alfie Mawson.
It's all fun and games until someone...
I bet Rio Ferdinand has injured some teammates over the years, because he was great for jumping, wasn't he? He used to do a big 70-yard run-up and then a flop on top of him. Yeah.
Of course, Martin Palermo holds the all-time record for being injured while celebrating, no? Do you remember Martin Palermo,
famous
for missing all those penalties? He scored a goal. This is when he was in South America and stood up on the advertising hoarding and tried to do a backflip and ruptured his ligaments and was out for 6 months.
Oh, dear.
Anyway,
the Premier League player who used to do, somersaults and was told he could not do it. Was it Luan Noir?
Yeah, Luan Noir, I think,
There was also Celestine Babayaro, before he'd even made his debut for Chelsea, did something bad to his knee by doing his backflip. Mm-hmm. Just don't do it.
Don't do it.
Stay safe.
Anyway. There you go. That's the football and more. Time to get those odds from Paddy Power with producer Ben.
Thank you, James. I'm with Lee Price from Paddy Power. Lee, you've been at Cheltenham all week. How's it going?
I'm just about hanging in there, Ben. It's nice to hear your voice. How are you?
I'm good as gold, thank you. I'm certainly much better than Jose Mourinho and Antonio Conte and supporters of both clubs. Now, we asked on Monday about Man U and Chelsea both getting knocked out of Europe, which they duly did. Now, what about them both going out of the FA Cup this weekend?
Yeah, I think I owe you an apology, Ben. I think I labelled you unpatriotic, but actually it turns out you're just psychic. You can't imagine both teams going out of this competition having had midweek disasters. For United in particular, the FA Cup's all they have left, and Mourinho really needs to put the critics to bed. It's a lengthy 10-1 that Brighton knocked them out. So you fancy that, there's real value there. Chelsea, on the other hand, they're away to Leicester. They might prioritise a top four chase, which makes Leicester quite interesting at 12-5 to send them packing. Combined, for both Man United and Chelsea to go out, that's 36-1.
And you've also got a money-back special on United winning, is that right?
We have, yeah. So money-back as a free bet if United beat Brighton. And that applies to losing first, last, anytime goal scorers, correct score and what odds Paddy markets, max refund £10, online only.
So those are the big boys in the FA Cup. What chance Wigan continuing their amazing run against the Premier League sides? They're up against a side who probably won't be a Premier League side much longer, that's Southampton.
Yeah, least of all now they've hired Mark Hughes, eh? Wigan have tumbled a bit in the league. They've sacrificed their league form a bit for the Cup. And I wonder if they're starting to panic about that. They've won just one of their last five fixtures, while Southampton have only won a couple of games all season. So both teams might welcome a winning feeling. We're really tight on this one. We make Southampton slight favourites at 11-10. Wigan at home, probably the better team form-wise, are 12-5.
And our last one for today, Lee. Spurs have got a brilliant record against Swansea. Don't think Swansea have managed to beat them since the early 80s. But that was before Harry Kane's injury, and it was before Carlos Carvajal came on board.
Yeah, could it all change? Swansea, dare I say, it looks safe to me now from relegation. They've really bounced with the new manager, and they probably quite enjoy a cup run. But for Tottenham, it's less of a free hit. There's a bit of pressure building there. For a last chance of first major honour for Pochettino, and that'd be the first in a decade, all without Harry Kane. But we do expect them to progress. They're odds on. They're 2-5 to go through, while Swansea are 13-2 to prompt Carvajal into another amusing metaphor. But I think Spurs will stop that.
You can find out all those odds and more at paddypower.com. It is 18 plus only. BeGambleAware.org. And when the fun stops, stop. And it's time now for us to bring this Totally Football show to conclusion. But wait, Jules, there's still one item of unfinished business.
So far we found three players.
What was the question again?
So four players in the history of Manchester United have scored two goals or more in a knockout game of the Champions League. Ben Yedder being one. Uh-huh. Brazilian Ronaldo being another one. He scored a hat-trick. Uh-huh. Kaká. Found by Coxie is the third one, so there's a fourth one.
Is it another? Was it a Real Madrid player?
Yeah.
Was it Raul?
Yes. Yeah. Oh my God, I'm impressed.
In the game with Redondo's back heel, wasn't it?
In 2000.
Yeah, yeah. That was a good
come
list.
At the Cox, you best not miss. Oh yeah, Jules, yeah, that's the message there.
Well, I hope for many listeners. Please, listeners, let us know if you got the without cheating, without googling it.
And if you like that kind of quiz action, join us at 12:30 at facebook.com/thetotallyfootballshow. 12:30 Friday. Great questions, really. Full of fascinating trivia. Michael, you'd love it. See you there, 12:30 Friday. Many thanks for being back. Good to have you back.
Thank you.
Great to see you again, James Horncastle.
Thank you.
And you, Monsieur Laurent.
Merci.
When you join us again, Julien?
On Monday. Before we go to Dublin.
Perhaps to preview the upcoming international action.
Indeed.
All right. Excellent. Listeners, I do hope we can count on your presence then. Have yourselves a great weekend in the meantime. Cheerio.
The Totally Football Show is a Muddy Knees Media production. For sales and advertising, email sales@muddyneesmedia.com.